Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Shipping season returns to the Twin Ports. Can you identify these sounds? And are you ready to return to the roads, the seas, and the skies?
Just this last weekend, we saw over a million people go through TSA, but airfares are still low.
Plus, with the end of the pandemic possibly in sight, is now the time to ramp up your business? Those stories, the regional news and review, and a reflection on the tragedy in Georgia after this.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Shipping season returns to the Twin Ports. Can you identify these sounds? And are you ready to return to the roads, the seas, and the skies?
Just this last weekend, we saw over a million people go through TSA, but airfares are still low.
Plus, with the end of the pandemic possibly in sight, is now the time to ramp up your business? We'll look at that and a reflection on the tragedy in Georgia later in the show. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. You all know what that is, right? The shipping season is about to resume in the Twin Ports, and if you think you know the difference between the oar boat, the Paw R. Tugurtha, and the other horns blasting the harbor, play along with our sound judgment contest coming up shortly. But first, we'll need a guide to get us there and help us navigate all those treacherous roads, waters, and air routes. Who better to do so than Richard Stewart, Professor of Transportation and Logistics at the University of Wisconsin-Superior and Director of the Transportation and Logistics Research Center. And can we say our resident transportation expert? Welcome to Simply Superior, Richard Stewart.
Absolutely delighted to be here, Robin.
So with the pandemic, can we say nearing an end? We've got a lot of ground to cover. But first, can you tell us about the return of the shipping season, which is coming up next week? I understand the Soo Locks are going to open 12 hours early. Is that because the boats just can't wait to see us?
Well, part of it is another warm shipping season. You know, over the past decade, we've seen some of the warmest winters on record. Yes, we've had polar vortexes. I, like everyone else, was shivering at 35 below, but it actually lasted a relatively short period of time. And so the ice has declined greatly on the Great Lakes. That's part of the reason why they're able to open the locks a little bit early. As you know, they're closed in part because of ice, but mostly we closed the locks so we could conduct repairs on the Pole Lock, which is the only 1,000-foot lock in the Sault Ste. Marie lock system. And that means that the larger vessels cannot get through. We're about to build a second Poe lock, spelled P-O-E. When that is constructed, if we are able to, because of global warming, operate ships through thinner ice or less ice coverage, we may be able to extend the season even more, because then we could close one lock down to repair it while we keep the other lock open.
All right. So without getting too far into tonnage, what's your prediction? Will it be a busy season from the start, or again, as we end the pandemic, we hope ramping up slowly?
Well, all transportation is a derived demand. Someone needs the carriers to carry cargo for them. And what we've seen happening in the United States is manufacturing ramping up, an actual shortage of steel. Some of that's due to tariffs on the imports, but it's also the fact that some of our domestic steel producers cut back during the pandemic. My crystal ball is always a little bit cloudy, but I'm in great hopes that this shipping season will see a significant increase in the movement of taconite to the mills that are downbound from the head of the lakes.
Mm-hmm. Well, your crystal ball is always way better than mine. So that's a quick view of the water. What about the land? How are we going to be faring on the roads? Back to traffic again?
Well, one of the indicators of increased truck traffic is actually the order books for new trucks. And those order books have gone up in the past couple of months significantly, indicating that fleets who own trucks, and these fleets can be huge, or they could be three or four, someone who owns three or four trucks, is replacing older trucks. They do this when they have increased revenue and the expectation of even greater revenue. So we are picking things up. We had a little hiccup. Our retail sales were slower this month than they were in January, slower in February, I should say, not March. And that's largely due to the polar vortex, some other stuff going on. So trucking will continue to pick up.
Mm-hmm. And having done land and sea, how about the air? Are we ready to fly again?
Well, you've got a number of airlines who have converted passenger vessels to air cargo, because air cargo has actually gone up significantly. Some airlines have seen a 40% increase in air cargo. Now, are they as lucrative as passenger cargo? Well, depends on the routes and a lot of variables. Passenger traffic will be driven by the ability to safely travel without the spread of the pandemic. Just this last weekend, we saw over 1 million people go through TSA in the U.S., but airfares are still low because demand is still low compared to the supply of planes. I believe it will pick up very significantly once this pandemic subsides due to pent-up demand. A little bit of information. I'm on the board of directors for the North Shore Scenic Railroad, and we were talking about hotel space in the Twin Ports in the coming summer. And the hotels are reporting significantly increased booking in July and August, indicating people are preparing to travel as this pandemic subsides.
Well, they can't wait, right?
Well, we could all wait if we want to keep people safe, but when it is safe to travel, I think we will see significant movement of people.
Right.
By any mode possible.
Well, we're speaking with Richard Stewart, Professor of Transportation and Logistics at the University of Wisconsin-Superior and Director of the Transportation and Logistics Research Center. We're talking about transportation, of course, with an eye toward post-pandemic, although, you know, perhaps we're premature on post-pandemic. You know, that was a four-part alliteration I just said there. Totally impromptu, by the way. So if we do see more traffic on the roads, more vehicles, more trucks with us, might those trucks be a little bit different, or might they be using a different power source?
Well, a couple of things are happening both to automobiles and trucks. Anyone who's been following the news has noted that General Motors and other companies are coming out and planning to offer 30 new electric vehicles by 2025, pushing to sell more and more electric vehicles. I myself own a plug-in electric vehicle, and in the world of trucking, we have first and last mile. First and last mile refers to that delivery to the retail customer or pickup from the retail customer. A lot of that's done by smaller delivery trucks. And you're starting to see the trend. For example, the post office is planning to have a high percentage of their new trucks, electric drivetrains. And those trucks are going to be built here in Wisconsin at Oshkosh. Mercedes-Benz is rolling out electric version of its Sprinter van. Ford is launching an electric version of the Transit cargo van. Those are vehicles where the distances they travel are fairly short. They can often spend the night charging and be ready to go the next morning, or charge during the day and go at night. And President Biden in January indicated he wants to convert the federal fleet to electric drivetrains. That will take considerably longer. But heavy loads traveling long distance are difficult to do on battery power. Your 18-wheelers, the big 53-foot semis we all see in the highways and sometimes get stuck behind, unable to pass, they're going to remain with diesel and compressed or liquefied natural gas as the primary source of fuel for a while to come yet, because the battery size charging is going to be very difficult for them to overcome in the near term, being about 10 years. That being said, one of the deterrents to an average consumer buying an all-electric vehicle is the range of 200 or 300 miles. That works fine for Germany, but Germany's about the size of Wisconsin. So trying to drive across the United States when you only have 200 miles range or 300 miles and takes you 6 or 7 hours to recharge is very difficult. What they've done in China, which also is a big geographic country, they have set up service stations where you pull in. It's like a quick trip with the playground and all the other stuff in a Starbucks rolled in one. They take your vehicle, put it on a lift, hoist it up, replace the battery, and you're out in 10 minutes, about the time it takes you to fuel your tank.
You know, I know that the Ford Mustang is has a new electric version that's giving Tesla a run for its money. So you said you have one. What are you driving?
Well, I drive a plug-in electric vehicle, a Mitsubishi Outlander, which is the most popular plug-in electric vehicle in Europe and in Canada. I enjoy it very much. It's an SUV. I get about 28 to 30 miles on a charge on my battery, which is enough for me to easily commute back and forth to work from Duluth to Superior. And in the course of a month, I might fill my 11-gallon gas tank once.
And as a comparison, I too drive a Mitsubishi Outlander, but it is not electric. So I'm the guy filling those tanks that you're not. So great. Anything else on the immediate horizon? And I'm going to remain optimistic that these are indeed the closing days of the pandemic.
Well, a couple of things that is a transformation by the pandemic. With the lockdown, all that we've had to go through, we've seen a tremendous increase in home deliveries. And we have some expectations which are going to be difficult to maintain. We have an expectation of, in some cases, next day delivery. We have an expectation of the availability of international goods being delivered to us domestically. That means you have a supply chain that extends from Superior, Wisconsin, all the way to Hunan, China. And every element of that supply chain, the ocean ships, the first and last mile trucks, the heavy haul trucks, the rail intermodal, all has to work well, plus the warehousing. We found in the pandemic that a lot of these systems are actually fragile. And they're fragile for two reasons. Sometimes we lack the infrastructure to handle surges in demand. And we also lack the personnel for many of these systems when we get an increase in demand. Some specific things we're starting to see. Warehouses, companies like Amazon, are moving their warehouses closer to the retail customers. They're buying up old mall buildings. We all remember what a mall is, right? That's the place we went where it was cold to walk around and look at things.
Right.
Well, Amazon's bought up a lot of these, converted them to warehouses so that they could be close to their customer and make quick deliveries, even practicing some work with drones, robotic deliveries, other systems. But within that are a couple of issues. You still have to get all those goods we want to buy from China or Europe into that warehouse. And then we're running into another problem as home delivery has surged. And that's two problems. First one is that about 20 to 30% of everything that's purchased online is returned. Buyer's remorse is often the case. Mm-hmm. And you have to have what we call a reverse logistics system to handle those goods moving back if they're still sellable to sell them. And it's a complex, difficult thing to do. The other issue we have, which is an international issue in home deliveries, in order that your good arrives safely, we have to package it so it doesn't get damaged during transit. The packaging material, some of the paper products are recyclable, but the demand for paper has actually gone down, which has created a problem of what do we do with the paper packaging that we want to put into recycling. And the other issue we're running into is, by and large, most of the plastic that we use in the United States is not recyclable. A very small percentage really is. We used to just stuff it in containers and ship it to China. China refuses to take it anymore.
Yep. They don't want it anymore. That's right.
And we're trying to push it to other countries. I don't know how that'll work. What have you heard, Robin?
We actually probably will have another show about that. It's one of my other pet interests. So on that note, and your constant reminder to us that none of this happens in a vacuum, all transportation and logistics, especially that part of it, is all interrelated. We've been speaking with Richard Stewart, professor of transportation and logistics at the University of Wisconsin-Superior and director of the Transportation and Logistics Research Center. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Look forward to talking to you again, Robin.
Oh, and one more thing. Do you have a favorite ship horn as we go into our sound judgment contest?
Well, there's two horns that I love in the harbor of Duluth, Superior. The first one is the Alder's horn, which is rich and very strong. And I do like the Paul Tregerthen's horn. But I'm going to give a shout out while I'm on the radio to our son, Lieutenant Alexander Stewart, who is the commanding officer of the Coast Guard cutter Biscayne Bay in St. Ignace, breaking ice in the Sioux, and his horn is also very melodious.
All right, we will listen for it. We've been talking transportation with Richard Stewart, and we're not done yet. We need your expertise to help us premiere our first sound judgment contest, where a lucky listener is invited to join us on the air and show off their skill at identifying those sounds that all of us think we know well, but maybe not as well as we think we do. Our subject this week is, of course, transportation. And joining us from Superior is Shirley Brandt. Welcome to Simply Superior, Shirley.
Hi.
So you've read the rules. We'll play three sets of similar sounding sounds, and each pair will tell you what they are, and you tell us which one is which. So without further ado, let's go to the files and play them. Sound A and sound B. One of them is the Paul R. Tregerthen oar boat, and the other one is the aerial lift bridge. And for our listeners, we sent the sound files to Shirley so she could play them on her computer rather than trying to identify them on the phone. So, Shirley, if you're ready to play, play sound A.
Okay. Okay, and I'll play B now. Okay. I played A and I played B, and I believe A is the lift bridge and B is the oar boat.
And for your first answer, you are entirely right.
Okay.
Which is a great way to start us off, and what better way to indicate it than with my bicycle bell. Oh. I'm also super impressed that you can tell the bridge from a boat, especially if you're out there in the harbor somewhere. So
That's true.
So, moving on to C and D, we have either the lift bridge again, from the car's point of view, or the North Shore Scenic Railway.
Okay. Well, let me play C. And now I'll try D. Well, C is the railroad.
Which would make D the lift bridge.
That's correct.
Great. All right. We are going 2-for-2.
All right.
So let's go to our final selection, sounds E and F. One of them is the sound of an Airbus A319 airplane from the interior before takeoff and after landing. The other one is me with my hacksaw and a piece of wood.
Okay. This one might be tough. So let me try E. And now I'll try F. All right. E sounds like the airplane, and F sounds like a hacksaw.
Well, I must have a pretty good hacksaw because you got that right, which makes you 3-for-3. But on the airplane one, I have to say, frequent passengers hear this sound, and they kind of smile. People indeed say it sounds like they're either sawing off the wing or there's a barking dog in the luggage compartment.
Well, there's definitely something going on with that airplane.
If I hadn't told you that one of the sounds was an airplane, would you have had the slightest idea?
No, never. Although I have flown on many, many airplanes, so maybe I would have.
Well, Shirley, you just set the standard, and you are the ultimate good sport.
Thank you so much.
You don't just get bragging rights on this, although I think it's pretty cool to be able to tell people you do know the difference between the Paul Artigartha and the lift bridge. But we also will send you, you could have a choice. Would you like a WPR t-shirt or would you like a Frost River pint mug that comes with a leather holder around it?
I think I'll do the t-shirt.
All right. Again, our very good sport and a person who has set the standard for the Simply Superior Sound Judgment Contest, Shirley Brandt, the Superior. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And if you'd like to play along on air in our Sound Judgment Contest, drop me a line at robin.washington@wpr.org. That's robin.washington@wpr.org. And just to be sure, put the words Sound Judgment in the subject line.
Like a bridge over troubled water.
Coming up, a look at local business as the tide begins to turn on the pandemic, and a reflection on the Asian American killings in Georgia. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. So with the approval of another $1.9 trillion relief package by the federal government, most of us are looking at what's in it for us. And you should be, because your name is on the check or direct deposit headed to you this week or next. The idea is to both help individuals, but also the economy as a whole, meaning businesses. Some small businesses were too small to qualify in the earlier rounds of the forgivable PPP loans or other aid. Here to tell us about what's more tailored for them this time around is our regular small business guru, Andrew Donahue, director of the Small Business Development Center here at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. Welcome to Simply Superior, Andy.
Thanks, Robin. Glad to be back.
And also joining us is Ariana Buck from Empire Coffee in Superior. Welcome, Ariana.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So I know I said that Andy would tell us stuff, but I'm going to ask you first, Ariana, before he gives us the hard code facts. If you could just tell us about Empire Coffee, what you offer, and how you've managed to survive and maybe thrive during the pandemic.
Yeah, Empire Coffee is a coffee tap house. In Superior, we offer a variety of different roasters from around the state, around the country. We also offer a variety of sandwiches and salads for just general, food stuff. And we have a 1,900 square foot space, so it's really good for, you know, sitting down and hanging out all day and doing homework or working. And I think what really helped us in the whole pandemic was the fact that we have so much space that we can safely social distance people while, you know, allowing people to come in and go. Because right now, especially for college students, they don't have anywhere to hang out other than, you know, their apartments or dorms. And that gets pretty monotonous for them.
Mm-hmm. And how consistent have things been? I mean, you've had to deal with, first of all, customers themselves, either being feeling trepidatious about going out, but, you know, all the different rules between the state and the city and your own feelings of safety.
Yeah, obviously our, you know, our employee and customer safety is kind of a big deal for us because it's not fun if someone's feeling uncomfortable being out at all. I think in general, after about the May mark last year, things started to pick up once things kind of got not normal, but stable, I guess is a good way to put it.
Right. We now know never to use normal again because we don't know what normal is anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So I think once that kind of stabilized a little bit, that made people feel a little bit safer. And we stayed consistent. Like we didn't close down at all. Luckily we had, you know, a really dedicated following to come ordering online, ordering for delivery, coming in to take out kind of deal. So we honestly lucked out because there are a lot of businesses in the area and obviously in the country that weren't as lucky.
Mm-hmm. And so, Andy, you sent out a press release in mid-February telling about the Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP as I refer to it, an opportunity for very small businesses. What was or is that, and is it still available, or is there anything similar?
Yeah, Robin, there was a exclusive period in which small businesses had this opportunity within a 14-day period that could apply exclusively towards the Paycheck Protection Program. So basically, it was tailored towards those really small businesses that had 20 or less people or employees, sole proprietors, independent workers, gig workers that could apply exclusively to the program to, you know, get their application through their lender and get approved through the Small Business Administration. That did expire about a week and a half ago or so. However, there is still plenty of funding available. Currently, the second round of the Paycheck Protection Program is available through March 31st. However, there certainly could be extensions that could be granted through the SBA or through Congress. Those details are just not quite known yet. However, the biggest thing is, though, there are plenty of funds still available. So if there is a business or an organization that does want to apply, I certainly would recommend them doing so as soon as possible.
And before we forget, let's have your email address or your web address. So because March 31st is not that far off, and anyone listening to this who thinks that they might be eligible should contact you.
Yeah, absolutely. So they can contact me directly at the university. So my email address is adonahue, so that's A-D-O-N-A-H-U-E, at uwsuper.edu. Our website, the easiest way to navigate it is just go to our Wisconsin Small Business Development Center website, which is wisconsinsbdc.org. On that page, we have a variety of different information. One of the tabs is COVID-19 relief and how we can help businesses. That will give a lot of the most up-to-date information for organizations, businesses, and individuals to learn more about what's happening currently, not only from the federal level, but also from the state of Wisconsin level for different resources that could be available to help them navigate through the COVID-19 pandemic.
All right. Well, for any listeners searching for their pen or pencil, we're going to repeat this again in the program. Ariana, what about Empire Coffee's size and history of the program? Were you big enough or small enough to take advantage of the various rounds of PPP or any other programs?
Oh, yeah. I only have maybe 4 or 5 employees at any time, so we're very tiny. So we were able to take advantage of all sorts of different programs that were available for small businesses. And Andy is a really good resource. He's been an integral part of Empire Coffee since the very beginning. Thank you, Andy. You're the best.
It's more than just because he likes coffee, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, we approached Andy 4 years ago, I think, well before we started the coffee shop. And he put up with me and my partner really well. So, I mean, it's got to be more than just the coffee at this point.
All right. We're speaking with Ariana Buck of Empire Coffee on Tower Avenue in Superior and Andrew Donahue, director of the Small Business Development Center at the University of Wisconsin in Superior. So the vaccines are being administered. As of last week, we hit something like 20% of Wisconsinites and millions of doses getting to the states and into people's arms every week. I think we can say we've turned a corner. Ariana, assuming the worst is over by the summer, are you okay till then, or do you still need a helping hand?
I think at this point, we're doing really well. We made a lot of really good decisions early on, like not revamping, but maybe increasing our online deliveries so that it's easier for customers to get their food from us. In the very beginning, we definitely, it was something that we relied on pretty heavily. But I think right now we're in a really good spot.
Mm-hmm. Andy, do you have a warning for businesses getting too confident and opening up too quickly? And I'm thinking that we could all look at Texas as an experiment and see how that turns out.
Yeah, you know, I guess certainly every business is going to be a little bit different in how they operate and what they perceive as what their new normal is going to be. I still obviously recommend that, you know, businesses follow the guidance from the Wisconsin Department of Health, their local cities and counties and municipalities. But certainly as things, you know, open up, more vaccines are given out and people are feeling a little bit more comfortable, hopefully it gives an opportunity where, you know, as spring and summer approach, more and more individuals are outside. They have the opportunity to do some different things, but again, still being cautious and understanding the environment around them.
Mm-hmm. And I meant that question to you, obviously, from a business point of view, not public health, although all of us are, you know, getting quite familiar with the public health pronouncements. What are some dangers of it? You and I have talked about this before, even before there was such a thing as a pandemic to talk about, right? Of businesses who, certainly startups, who do very well at first and realize they either have more than they could handle or, you know, the area they're going is not necessarily the area they should be going.
No, I guess the big thing that I would certainly recommend for all businesses right now is to certainly maintain and keep looking at your income and your cash flow, where things are at currently. You know, even over the last couple of years, you know, pre-pandemic levels show one thing, but then also the last year, you know, for the most part, shows a whole different ballgame. So the opportunity exists to, you know, really analyze and see where your revenue is, where your cash flow is from that perspective, but then also making that plan for the future, looking at the next 3 to 6 months, looking at the next 12 to 18 months, and how does your business want to operate? We were just having a internal conversation with my staff this morning just about, you know, how businesses are going to react, what businesses still need to look at going forward the next 3 to 6 months, especially with, you know, the Paycheck Protection Program funding still available. And even if they don't feel that they need this funds, there are plenty of funds still available. So take the opportunity to apply because you just never know what the next 3 to 6 months is really going to bring. Yes, things are looking better. However, you know, there's still a lot of restrictions and still a lot of unknowns out there how things are really going to roll out in the next short-term 3 to 6 month process.
I hear you urging cautiousness and repeating your normal mantra, which is always look at your bottom line, know your net from your gross, make sure you're not spending too much to bring in that revenue. That being said, I don't think it's my imagination. I'm seeing a lot of restaurants starting in the area, particularly on the Duluth side. I swear I've seen 3 announcements of openings in the last month or so. Is now a good time to do that? Or is that just something that people on the Minnesota side do and you don't have to worry about that in Wisconsin?
No, we've actually seen an increase of business activity over the, and truly over the last couple of years, but primarily, especially over the last 6 months, from the food and restaurant beverage industry, we've seen quite a few new restaurants open in the city of Superior and the surrounding area. And we certainly still have plenty more that we're working with currently. So this last year has really, I think, taught us, you know, individuals as, you know, opportunities exist and maybe that passion that you've had sitting in your head or that maybe has been in your garage for quite a while. It's given that, you know, that opportunity to start laying that groundwork to grow something. And we've seen that just from our perspective with Small Business Development Center, how many clients over the last year we've been able to assist and how many new businesses are probably coming on the horizon just based on, you know, interest level, new passions or opportunities that have presented itself.
Mm-hmm. Again, I think we've talked about this before. Starting at a time like this actually may be a good idea because if you can do well in a time of adversity, then when times are good, you should do very well. Ariana, I know you expressed just a minute ago the cautiousness that I was saying Andy was invoking, but any thoughts of expansion that you've been entertaining? You don't have to, just because I said that.
I first want to comment on the point you guys just made before. I was talking to another business owner across the street from me, and we were kind of commenting on how much growth there's been of new businesses. And she made an excellent point of saying, like, it's a lot like a forest fire. Like, yes, there's a lot of, you know, bad stuff happening during, but you notice really quickly all the new growth that starts immediately afterwards. So it's, you know, it's promising. I personally want a food truck. And my partner is saying no because he doesn't want. So we have like a Roman Empire theme. We're in the historic Empire building, and my partner is very, Roman history is very near and dear to his heart. And he is opposed to the idea purely because I want it to look like a chariot.
wait a minute. I think wouldn't he like that idea?
Yes, but also no, because then he would have to be in it, and he said it would be kind of embarrassing.
Because he doesn't want to wear a skirt or a toga, right? Okay.
He already has a centurion helmet. I don't know what the holdup is, but I guess a girl can dream.
All right. Well, this conversation is not quite getting off the rails, but maybe getting a little bit away from business. But it's not, because Andy just said this is a time for people to exercise their dreams. So if you can reconcile your dream with your partner's dream, you might have something there. But certainly a food truck, to me, and don't go by my advice, seems like something you might want to do, if I can take your wonderful analogy there, when the forest is bare, right? You know, and I know people have done food trucks. It's a lot harder than they think. You know, it's not something that you just take a sandwich and take your car. But yeah, on the other hand, you know, you are experienced. You do know how to run this business. So, you know what, Ariana, I just realized why you're named Empire Coffee. It took me a moment there.
You'd be surprised the number of people who ask if it's a Star Wars reference, and we have to say, no, George Lucas and Disney very much love their copyright.
All right. Well, we won't worry about anybody striking back your empire. So we've been joined by Ariana Buck of Empire Coffee on Tower Avenue in Superior. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Andrew Donahue from the Small Business Development Center at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. Thank you for joining us, Andy.
Thanks, Robin. I was glad to be back.
Coming up, the regional news and review after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Katie Galeotto of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Katie.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Katie, we heard from Professor Stewart about his predictions on the shipping season. You attended a press conference this week by port officials. What are they saying?
Yes, Robin, the Duluth Seaway Port Authority just recently moved into a new headquarters in the Seaway Building, which is down on the Duluth waterfront on Rice's Point. They had vacated their old headquarters nearby more than 2 years back to make way for an expanding tenant, which is aerial lift truck maker Alltech Inc. And port officials were pretty optimistic about the upcoming shipping season, which starts next week. And they say they hope it'll be enough to help them recover from kind of the rough year that 2020 dealt them.
Well, we'll take any good news we can. And again, if it's coming from both the Port Authority and Professor Stewart, how could it be wrong? I'm going to throw some cold water on all this, though, by taking you back to one of our more sobering stories affecting the area and the world. What's the latest on the Derek Chauvin trial in Minneapolis?
We are in the second week of jury selection, and the court is still working toward finding those 12 jurors and two alternates for the trial, which the judge has said will start no earlier than March 29th. But one of the major points of contention this week is the record $27 million civil settlement between the city of Minneapolis and the family of George Floyd, which was announced last Friday. That news caused some concerns that the civil outcome might have an impact on the criminal case. And the judge in the case actually ended up dismissing two jurors who had previously been selected because they had caught wind of the settlement and indicated that it could affect how they'd feel about the trial.
Hmm. Well, back to our region, and again, looking more positively to the spring. Do I understand correctly that we may become the new spring break destination? The next Daytona?
I don't know if we'll be Daytona, but last summer we at times saw record numbers of tourists coming up to the North Shore, booking up campsites, hotels, and resorts. And we're seeing a similar trend during this spring break season. It's not quite as busy as it was during the warm months, but attractions like Lutzen Mountain Ski Area up in Cook County say they're seeing about twice as many visitors on weekdays, likely in part because families have more flexibility to work or study remotely.
All right. Well, Danny, you left us on hold the other week with your story about the communities in Wisconsin that don't have working 911 service. Is it back yet?
Yeah, unfortunately, no, it's not. And this will be something that'll take a long-term solution to fix. As you know, we talked about before, six towns lost their ambulance service provider when Great Divide Ambulance Service decided not to renew its contracts with those towns last year. A number of those towns were able to hook up with another service, but the towns of Gordon and Shannon-Golden still have no provider, and town officials in the county have been speaking with state emergency medical services providers to see, you know, what potentially could be done to help address this issue, which it stems from the fact that there is an aging population in this area and also a lack of volunteers. And really the entire state of Wisconsin is struggling with that issue of not having enough volunteers to operate some of these rural ambulance services. So they've been looking at this issue, and even though these towns are the ones that are mandated to provide this service, it's the county's responsibility to provide that 911 service and also for law enforcement to respond to an EMS call at times. And so, you know, when they get a call that comes in, they're constantly looking for another service that might be able to come. But that's challenging because of the long distances between some of these towns, which makes response time very difficult, and also because of the short staff that these other services have. And, you know, their primary responsibility is to serve their own towns or their own service area. So they've been examining some options for Gordon and Shannon-Golden. Some of the solutions that they're looking at would be potentially creating an ambulance district. Also, there's been discussion about creating a countywide ambulance service, which would back up towns within the county, too, that have their own service. But there's some concern about that because Ashland County is not in a good financial spot right now. This spring, they're planning to ask voters to raise taxes by nearly $1 million for the next 5 years because they've reached what county leaders call a fiscal crisis. So they're really stuck in a hard spot and trying to figure out something that would work so that they can get people this emergency service that they need.
I don't think there's any question that's needed. So I've been spending this whole show talking about the end of the pandemic being near, we hope. But that doesn't mean the tragic losses aren't still being felt. And you have one in particular involving a Bad River tribal elder.
Yeah, unfortunately, Bad River tribal elder Joe Rose passed away due to complications of contracting COVID-19. On February 23rd, he was 85 years old and just a pillar within that community and really a keeper of the knowledge and the history of Anishinaabe culture and practices for the Bad River Band. And just people in the Bad River community, they love Joe. You know, to some, he was better known by his Ojibwe name, Mokanagizi. And I apologize if I said that wrong. His name was Rising Sun. And he was a light in the lives of many people, both within the tribe and beyond in northern Wisconsin. He was a huge environmental steward and a proponent of, you know, wilderness and protecting the environment. He had fought to defend tribal treaty rights, federal tribal treaty rights, in a number of instances, you know, going back to the 80s during, you know, protests at the boat landings over spearfishing, when white protesters were gathering and hurling rocks and insults at tribal members who were seeking to affirm their rights to spearfish in ceded territory. You know, he was among those who defended those rights, and he was among those who went down to Madison back in 2012 to oppose a Republican bill that weakened environmental standards to pave the way for a more than $1 billion proposed iron mine in Ashland and Iron Counties. He was really looked up to in the community. He served on the Ashland County Board and also led the Native American Studies program at Northland College for a long time. And so his loss is deeply felt among people in the area, and everybody is just really going to miss Joe Rose.
Right. He certainly will be missed. There is another issue revolving around Anishinaabe history that has the city of Superior looking for a respectful solution.
Yeah. So the Commission on Communities of Color in Superior launched a discussion last week about renaming Moccasin Mike Road, which leads out to Wisconsin Point, which was a site that's historically significant to the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. And it was also the site of burial grounds that were, unfortunately, where remains were removed due to a development project at the turn of the century. So there's been an effort now kind of being spearheaded by Councillor Jenny Van Sickle to change the name of that road and give it the respect that she says the families and descendants of Chief Osagi deserve, because she points out that this road, Moccasin Mike Road, was named after a non-Native person, a politician who helped build the road on the site of the old Osagi Trail. And so she's been working with members of Chief Osagi's descendants, members of the family. And she said that even within Native families, that there's some dispute over whether or not the road carries any negative connotations. But really, they are just making this effort to bring more respect and recognition and knowledge of the people who originally settled on Wisconsin Point.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
And Katie Galeotto of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Katie.
Thanks for having me, Robin.
You can read the stories by Katie and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport. And be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. And finally today, our theme in this show has been looking forward to an end to the pandemic and returning to what we used to call normal. Yet there is a part of that normal that no sane person would ever want to return to, and that some of us may have naively forgotten. The mass shooting in Georgia this week rocked us all back to that horrific normality of senseless violent deaths, made even more terrifying by the targeting of Asian American women. Among scores of rallies nationwide expressing outrage and seeking solace was one in the Twin Ports Wednesday night, held at the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial in Duluth. The rally co-organizer and speaker who follows is Julia Chang, and as often in our small community, here's my disclosure that we are married. But know that she speaks not just for one or two, but uncountable souls who once again cry out, no more. I'm Robin Washington. Please stay safe, everyone.
Precede actions. Verbal abuse leads to physical violence. It started with a rising tide of harassment, the vandalism of homes and businesses, coughing on an Uber driver and ripping off of his mask, daylight robberies and shoving attacks, using gravity and concrete as lethal weapons. And now this, a mass murder. A mass shooting. President Biden quickly acknowledged the scapegoating and the abuse. Yes, it must stop, as he said. It is un-American and it must stop. So we stand here together tonight to stop it. Tonight we speak out because silence has been death. Like our African American brothers and sisters, we ask, why must we continuously establish our humanity, our right to live in peace and to prosper in a country that we love? The country that I'm here because of the courage of my immigrant parents from China. Seven women, six of them of Asian descent, and one man are dead. Thankfully, another survived, although he faces a long road of healing. Why does anyone think they have permission to do this? They do not. And tonight our presence says, no more hate.